Greetings, everyone. Are you ready for an accelerated course in higher consciousness? This is how our global village will get ahead of the accelerated rate of change we are now seeing in the world. It won't be with the same consciousness that created the problems we see. It will be with a new consciousness that is now evolving with the angels of our better nature. Welcome to Cosmic Love.
Greetings, everyone. This is Christopher Rudy with Cosmic Love for September 3rd, 2016. And today it's my great pleasure to be interviewing Laura Kortner and my longtime friend Robert Hieronymus, who have together co-authored a fascinating new book called The Secret Life of Lady Liberty, Goddess in the New World. And this is an in-depth 430-page book on the secret life of the Goddess of Liberty that we're going to delve into today. I met Robert Hieronymus back in the early 70s when we were both Rosicrucians, and I still have Bob's 3-inch Xerox copied PhD thesis on the Great Seal of the United States. I've always been fascinated by the pure intent of U.S. founders who use metaphysical symbols to represent their spiritual intention. And I've looked at that over the years and marveled at it. And Robert is also well known as a Baltimore, Maryland area painter of giant murals with metaphysical symbols that represent America's history and destiny. And this is the history and destiny that is highlighted with many examples in The Secret Life of the Lady Liberty, the divine feminine roots of America. So Bob's also a visual artist and a longtime radio host at 21stcenturyradio.com. And as an internationally known historian, Bob's research has been used by the White House, the State Department, and published in the Congressional Record. He's made numerous appearances on documentaries airing on the History, Discovery, BBC, and National Geographic channels, as well as many other national and international outlets. Laura Kortner has collaborated on previous titles with Bob, including Founding Fathers, Secret Societies, and United Symbolism of America. She's the director of the Roscoe Mansion Community Health Center in Baltimore, Maryland, where they do all kinds of holistic health, including homeopathy. So thank you, Robert and Laura, for coming on Cosmic Love today.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's a joy to talk with you again, Christopher. You are doing great work.
I think it's great to be on a show called Cosmic Love talking about the resurgence of the female divine. Just what a synchronicity that you're writing about that yourself right now.
Yeah, we're doing a series on the rise of the divine feminine. And as yourself, I can't think of anything better to do. The times are changing fast, and this book came along at a time that when I heard you're doing this book, and I checked it out, and I've been reading it. I'm just amazed of the synchronicity of your work, and I know it's been a long time work. You guys have been doing this, publishing this kind of stuff for a long time, and your radio show, you're really out there. So I'm, kudos, and let's delve into this work. This is kind of a synopsis, Robert, of a lot of stuff you've been doing.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. This is not really what you would say work. This is the reason why I'm here.
Yeah.
I mean,
I understand that. Yeah,
I know you understand that because you're doing the same thing and have been doing it a long time. And the key is that this is the time to make the changes. Women must lead. Without their leadership, we will continue with the same kind of killing and murders that have been going on for so many, many 5,000 years since the patriarchal system moved in and took over.
Yep.
And we'd like to call an end to the patriarchal system and put some balance into it, because balance is the key.
That's the key word, is balance.
Yeah,
I think what we're seeing right now is kind of a manifestation of, male energy on steroids and about to lose the job, so it's running real fast. And this thing of this theme of balance, I mean, and the understanding of the divine feminine as themes throughout your book, it's really, I see this issue with the divine feminine and the feminine energies, and what I went through when I began the show Cosmic Love 9 years ago was I didn't know what the divine feminine was for sure, but I'd been a male on, you know, on steroids, Aries steroids most of my life, and I figured, well, you know, maybe the name and the flame are the same. You know, by doing it, I'll learn how to do it, and I'll fake it till I make it. You know?
Yeah, well, you're beyond faking it now.
Well, I'm working at it, and again, I can't think of anything better to do. And actually, I'm really rather enjoying it. And in interviewing people like yourself, I get a lot of people a lot smarter than me that I can talk to and get to read their books, and then, you know, share what they're doing. So. What you're doing and what you've done on the Great Seal of the United States was kind of, I see, foundational to a lot of the stuff that's in the book. So what brought you to write about the Statue of Liberty?
Well, it came about because I saw so much terrible research being done by extreme Christians who were condemning it and saying that it was kind of satanic, not kind of, but definitely satanic.
The devil.
They look at that eye in a triangle, and you know what that eye in a triangle is. It's the cosmic, you know, it is the supreme deity. But they didn't see it that way. They looked at it as more or less like Satan.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, that's what they would call it, and that's why I had to go. I didn't want to do a lot of those television shows on the History Channel and National Geographic and Discovery because they wouldn't let me talk about the things I wanted to, especially Divine Feminine. That was an absolute no-no.
Oh, really?
So, yes, I got a chance finally, though, to talk to everyone about the real history of the Great Seal of the United States, but then they would have other people on who I could not debate. They wouldn't allow me to debate.
Yep.
And the other people would come on and basically say after I got off the air, the total opposite of what I was talking about. And the people that were interviewing me, they thought that was fine. I didn't think it was fine because they were giving out great amounts of disinformation.
Information, yep.
And so I felt that it was time that somebody had to change this. And that's the reason why I decided, with the help of a very, probably knew this person. Do you remember Mayor William Donald Schaefer, who then came on to be our governor, William Donald Schaefer?
Oh, you know, from where I'm out here on Montana, out in the mountains, I didn't catch that story.
Oh, I'm sorry. But in Baltimore, William Donald Schaefer was our mayor, and then he was our governor, and he was the man that basically said to me, Bob, because I went to him and said, Governor, how did you become so successful? And he said, look, this is all you got to do. Surround yourself with intelligent women, and that'll take care of it. And he was right. He was absolutely right.
Well, there's a history of this that you get into the book. I love the story on the League of the Iroquois and the critical role they played in the...
Let me call on my partner here, Laura Courtner, on this. She is especially excellent in this particular area. Would you like her to talk on it?
I would love to. Laura, please come on.
Well, let me just say first, I think the two of you gentlemen are very good examples of the resurgence of the female divine. The fact that you're so interested in service, and you've embraced your nurturing sides, and you're able to be vulnerable, all the qualities that we find in the goddess-worshipping cultures, you know, the balance that you talked about at the very beginning, that's the shift that I think the two of you are feeling, and that's getting you excited about talking about, first of all, the reverse of the Great Seal, which is interpreted in a lot of feminine ways that Bob does in his research on the doctoral research that he did. And that led us to our interest in the Statue of Liberty, which is the symbol of America. It's not officially that, but I think everybody in America and pretty much around the world would use that as their go-to symbol, as the symbol to represent America. And what we're trying to do with this book is to remind everybody that it is a goddess, that she is a goddess. And it's an American symbol of America is a goddess, because the concept of liberty is something that is so large, it can be embodied by a woman. And the strengths in a woman that you find through worshiping, learning about the goddess worshiping cultures, are the strengths that everybody, man and woman today, need to tap into and activate. And I like what Bob has to say about the interpretation of the various symbols. She's an active symbol. But you wanted to talk about the League of the Iroquois, so let me go into that. We went to our publisher to talk about the basic symbols of the Statue of Liberty, which was pretty much the torch, the crown, the chain, and we wanted to interpret those. And they said, well, that's interesting enough, but let's expand the topic to Goddess in the New World. That's where that subtitle came from. Uh-huh. And we thought, okay, well, that expands the topic quite a lot. We'll have to do a lot more research. That's why it took us 6.5 years to finish this book. We had to do a lot of research. Now, we've done a lot already on the influence of the Iroquois on the founding fathers, so to speak. They picked up so much from their representational form of government, but they practically had blinders on when it came to what the Iroquois had as far as reverence for their women. They had women right there as their Supreme Court, so to speak. You can look at their legislative system. They had the top, just like we have a president. They had the Council of the Clan Mothers representing, making all the decisions, the official decisions, like the Supreme Court. They wouldn't go to war without the Council of the Women. They wouldn't create peace. They did all their negotiations for peace through their women. So we examined this through the symbol of the Indian princess, believe it or not, which was a symbol that came up and very popular during the Revolutionary Generation time. It's an adaptation of Britannia, a female symbol from Great Britain, mixed together with Libertas, which is the Roman goddess of freed slaves, and then cross-dressed with a Native American. So there she is, carrying the pole and the cap, but wearing a tobacco leaf skirt, and she's topless most of the time. She's partially naked, which is an important distinction between her and the later American liberty goddess that we know today, wearing a toga, or not a toga, but a Roman stola robe anyhow. So this was the original American liberty goddess. She was a Native American, and we use that to show a lot of differences between what ended up today as the United States, where we left out the reverence for the women, and we cloaked our Native American Indian princess image, and we made her more European, and eventually she's all Euro-American looking. And what that means to how we turned out and what we might have been if we'd followed the advice thoroughly that the Native Americans were giving. So that's how the League of the Iroquois and the Clan Mothers comes into the story of the Statue of Liberty.
And they were all over the Eastern Seaboard. There was 13 tribes. Is the League of the Iroquois, wasn't it isn't that a confederation on the?
It was a federation, and there were originally five. There were five tribes, and a sixth was joined later on, very late. And, of course, the most interesting thing about it is the League of the Iroquois and this republic that they established began in 1014 A.D. About at least 400 years before Christopher Columbus was around.
Almost 1,000 years. Well, not quite, but yeah.
Yes, so that's quite... So they were a republic that our founding fathers actually had them come into... Laura, which year was that? Do you know
that
when
they... That was 1776. It's very a direct influence. It was June and July of 1776 when they were debating whether or not to declare independence. There was a lot of a pushback against that idea of declaring independence. They knew it was yes or no, and that would be it if they declared. That would create war. So they invited a number of wise sachems, the chiefs of the Iroquois, to come observe this debate and to advise and counsel them. And they actually camped out on the floor above them where they were having this very important debate before the vote. And the founders have various academics have shown and poured through the founders' original writings, and you can find example after example of them saying, we are forming a government of modern Indians. You know, we've got so much respect for the Iroquois that we couldn't have done it without them. These are quotes from the John Adams and Thomas Paine and George Washington. Just about all of them wrote about their respect and what they learned. Yes, they got ideas from John Locke and Rousseau and the Enlightenment and all the things that you normally read as the influence of the Founding Fathers. But what they downplayed after they won the war was the influence from the Native Americans, because it, for a variety of reasons, didn't work anymore, because all of a sudden they were faced with all these treaties that they had to break for the settlers because they couldn't hold them back. So for a while there, they were very proud of becoming Indian and pretending to be Indian, representing themselves as Indian, and borrowing their legislative structure as well as a lot of customs.
Yeah, and
they left out the checks and balances with the Supreme Court feminine matriarchal councils.
With the women, and that also leads to they left out the respect for the earth, because in the Native American tradition, and this is not just the Iroquois, but pretty much all over the continent, the women and the earth are almost equal. The reverence for the one is equal to the other. Their creator stories are generally the woman comes down from the sky or appears from somewhere or creates the earth, or the earth is her body, the moon as well. And one of the tribes, the Anishinaabeg, I think it is, their word for woman is a walking earth.
Yeah, walking
it's
earth.
It's the same word.
Walking earth.
So they automatically respect the earth, and they respect women. And I think that's missing. That's one of the reasons our culture is so disrespectful of the earth, and we have dominated it. It's within our Abrahamic traditions that's what we were given to do, you know, pushed out of the Garden of Eden to dominate what was left of the earth, and that's our role. And that's unfortunately what the radical right wing sees as a danger in the Statue of Liberty that Bob was referring to a little bit earlier.
Yeah, you've got all these old records, you know, still getting revolved. You know, the end of Pisces and the beginning of Aquarius. It's all, you know, up on the surface, and it's kind of self-evident. The problem and the solution as far as balance of what has been an imbalance of the patriarchal and the matriarchal energies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bob, you were going to say.
You covered it.
Oh.
but that balance is the key to everything, and the Native Americans, the League of the Iroquois especially, but of course the Cherokee had the same kind of government, and so did several other tribes along the East Coast. And, you know, especially when you think about slavery, I know it's no coincidence that slavery was opposed in the North and not in the South. Because in the North, that's where the League of the Iroquois were. And they were the ones that influenced the entire North of our country. And it made a very big difference. But, of course, to the South, that was, you know, slavery was their way of making sure that the people could live. That unfortunately, at a terrible, terrible cost to do that to another human being. And, of course, that was very, very much opposed by the Native Americans, who never took slaves. As a matter of fact, when they got into wars, the League of the Iroquois, when they captured a person, a male, a female, or a group of hundreds of people, they did not make them enemies. They brought them into the tribe. They didn't throw them out. They didn't kill them. They did not torture them.
Usually.
Well, usually is mostly a time.
Yeah.
They were usually adopted into the tribe, right? And the interesting thing I found, anyway, was that the accounts of the women who were abducted, that in our Western movies, sort of, we've been brought up on Western movies as our understanding of our relationships with the Native Americans. You know, the women are abducted and they suffer the fate worse than death, and that would just be the worst thing. But in reality, many of them refused to come back. When they were attempted to be rescued or they were found again, they said, no, I'm sorry, I have more health. It's cleaner here. I have more autonomy. I have more power. I like my life fine here. Thank you. You guys go back to your so-called civilization. In the earliest, in fact, the very earliest colonies, like Jamestown and Plymouth Rock, where more than half of them died the very first winter, they had to post sentries because the Euro, the Europeans were running away to join the Indians where they could be safe and clean and healthy. And, you know, you never had the Indians running to join the Europeans on their
right.
own accord. Very, very rarely.
Well, wasn't there a some Native American a negotiation council with the Europeans where they went to the council? Is this the one you were talking about in 1776 where the Native Americans said to the Europeans, where are your women?
Where are your women? Well, that's actually a different time where that quote came from, and it was a bit earlier in, I think, the 1740s. And, in fact, a Cherokee was the one who quoted that. But that happened a lot. There's another Iroquois chief who's quoted saying something very similar. But it was something that the Native Americans just took for granted, especially at peace negotiations, tribal councils, when they first encountered the colonists and they would try to work things out for border disputes. The Native Americans would come expecting to talk to their women, and where are your women? And shocked that the Europeans would show up without their women counselors. And, of course, the Europeans were equally shocked to be asked that question because they'd been raised to believe that women didn't have independent minds, and they certainly wouldn't be consulted in something as important as war and peace. But heavens, they would never be brought along to negotiate at a war council. Whereas the Native Americans just couldn't trust what the Europeans said because they weren't coming from the mouths of women. They wouldn't trust it unless it was the women counseling them.
So it's
so
really
we
amazing.
We turn that phrase, and we think that everybody should be saying that today, you know, from your community organizational meetings to the corporate board to Congress very specifically, where only 20% are female. And in other countries, of course, in Latin America, in Europe, in Africa, all over the place, they've got over half of their women in parliament, but not in America.
Yeah,
so
I think we're number 71 out of 190.
Yeah.
They're women are better represented in miserable other countries.
Yeah.
And they're pretty miserable. And it's amazing to me that most people are totally unaware of this. Now, you can understand, Rudy, then, that Christopher, I mean, that's one of the reasons why, after doing dozens of shows on with National Geographic, everybody else, they would never allow me to talk about that. And
that's
that amazing. Was really the key. The women, the League of the Iroquois, is what held our nation together and gave us the kind of guidance we needed with our founding fathers, especially with Benjamin Franklin. It was no small thing that the Native Americans were invited into those debates. I mean, that's an amazing situation, and bringing in foreigners, so to speak, into your actual debates on how to set up the government, et cetera. But they needed them there. And they slept there. They slept up there for I don't know how long.
A couple of weeks,
yeah.
But, Franklin was one of their biggest admirers, really, way back in his pre-revolutionary time when he was a printer. He printed a lot of treaties for the Native Americans, got to know them, and went to a lot of their negotiation councils.
Wow.
And if you've heard of the Albany Plan, that was something he put together just at the beginning of the French and Indian War, as it was called, when Great Britain went to war with France in the colonies. This was the 1750s. In the colonies, which, of course, were English at the time, they had to go to fight the French in Canada, and on the side of the French were the Indians. So they were calling it the French and Indian War. And Benjamin Franklin got a number of representatives from the various colonies, they weren't states yet, together and said, we would be much stronger if we united. And he basically laid out what ended up as the Constitution many years later, but they use that little metaphor of one arrow is easy to break, but if you put several together, it's much harder to break. They thought it was a good idea, but they didn't ratify it at the time. It didn't go through.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's
back
right.
later in the 1780s, when they finally did put the Constitution together, they were the Articles of Confederation, they used that as their model.
Huh.
So this is how you link the Constitution to the League of the Iroquois, because the structure is right there. He copied it in the Albany Plan, and then the Albany Plan was copied into the Constitution.
So the major difference was, since the very founding of the United States, there's been an imbalance because the Supreme Court was not representing the divine feminine. It wasn't representing the nurturing matriarchal, you know, the mothers nurture a child, and they nurture, you know, the best interests of the community. So they have checks and balances on all war and all war making, and they took that out.
always side with the pro-patriarchy side, right. And I think one of the, this is just conjecture, but one of the reasons that the founding artists, so to speak, had so many, they used goddesses everywhere. They sort of compensated for that mother factor that they were leaving out, and they were also separating from their mother country and from Britannia, and they just littered their landscape with goddesses on their state seals, on their organizations, on their flags, on their statuary, you know, on the names of their newspapers, on their mastheads. You see, Minerva comes up an awful lot, and other than the Indian princess and the later American Liberty goddess, Minerva is right up there a lot, and they would always call her the Minerva of peace as opposed to the Minerva of war. But in fact, Minerva in the Roman interpretation was pro-patriarchy all the way. In the book, we go to her pre-Hellenic roots, which are much more interesting to us as a pro-feminine goddess worship, and she does have that in her background. But the way the founders would interpret her would have been the complete Roman patriarchal, and that particular goddess is known for siding with the patriarchy. She's her father's daughter. She, you know, doesn't have a mother. She springs right out of Zeus's head. So that was another reason that they would have been attracted to that particular goddess, because that's what they clung to as their reality, that would have to be pro-patriarchy and downplay the nurturing. Although the women after the revolution very slowly did gain education, and they relied on their women. That's another way they compensated for cutting them out. They relied on their women to become the educators of their sons, obviously, not their daughters so much, but they relied on them to raise the ethical patriots. They all thought that this experiment would only work, and they were probably right, and that's why it has only worked partially, would only work if the leaders were completely virtuous and ethical and self-sacrificing. You know, they didn't have any interest, self-interest to go.
Laura, did they refer to the goddesses also as virtues?
Yes, they do. Uh-huh.
And we had, tell us about the virtues, because there are scores of them.
Well, you've got justice and victory. Those were special ones. But that's why there are actually, why so many of those virtues are seen as allegorical females, is because in Latin grammar, they are feminine nouns. So they've got, they also depicted Demeter, and a lot of Ceres, you know, the abundance.
And again, that is one of the reasons why those who were patriarchs more than despised them, because of what it relates to the power of the goddess in regards to our country. Could we talk a little bit about the symbols of the Statue of Liberty, of what she's made of? And
I would love to. With the law, the book of the law she's holding under her arm. Of course, you've got the crown and the torch of illumination. Mm-hmm. What's the story on the book of the law under her arm?
Well, that's really good because it links to what's on that book. Or it looks like actually it's a plaque, but it is a book. And that is the date, July 4th, 1776. And saying basically the goddess was there on July 4th, 1776. Now, that's not how, of course, all of the politicians were thinking of it at the time. But one of the things that I'm most excited about in regards to the goddess deals with that torch. Because most people, of course, don't realize that it really was Laboulaye who really was the person that pushed the Statue of Liberty.
Most people know the name Auguste Bartholdi. He was the actual sculptor. But behind Bartholdi was his mentor, Edouard de Laboulaye, who was a legal scholar and a big fan of America and wrote a lot about the history of America. And Bob is about to tell you about why she's holding a tablet of law. It was because of Laboulaye.
Oh. Right, and they wanted to make sure that it was attached to the United States, that this was a goddess of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what confirmed that book with the date. Now, he also said it's, the torch is extremely important. It's not a torch that sets fire to things, but what's called the flambeau, the candle flame, that enlightens. It's a torch of enlightenment. And that court, of course, is because this was the age of enlightenment, which was actually what birthed the American Republic.
Yeah.
And torch is, of course, a symbol of light. And the first thing God did after creating heavens and the earth was let there be light. So obviously light is very close to the deity. And the Statue of Liberty's light symbolism was about elevated awareness, opened up to the spiritual world. And this accomplished spiritual vision and the Holy Spirit shining through her, purification through illumination or truth. My heavens, when you just take a look at that symbol, that tells us so much about this goddess. And of course, unfortunately, those who have opposed, I know you're going to be shocked to find out that there actually are people now from the extreme far right that want to dismantle the Statue of Liberty.
No, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, the poor in spirit will always be with us.
they're feeling that the Statue of Liberty actually Liberty was actually not a, well, if it was a goddess, then it had to be Satan, because their feeling about females, it was Eve that really messed everything up. You've heard that story, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yes. and you know, I look at that whole thing of the Statue of Liberty, me personally, like she represents light and love, or at least the way I think of the Book of the Law under her arm is the Book of Cosmic Law, which is the Book of Love.
Very
as far
good.
As I can see, you know, spiritual geometry, the order, the geometry of divinity, you know, the love model, the Book of Love under her arm.
Yeah.
So she represents light and love.
Yeah.
And you know she's holding it in her left hand, and the left hand being symbolic of the more passive, nurturing, meditative energies, while the right is the symbol of action and energy. So she's actively illuminating for the rest of the world with her right hand, with that torch of enlightenment, while she's cradling in her left hand, nurturing the American Republic and independence.
Yeah, it's like a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that metaphor. Yeah.
And it's like a child.
So you've used, on a lot of your murals, Bob, you've used, you know, the Statue of Liberty, the All-Seeing Eye, and different geometry.
Going to be sending you, I did a mural at Johns Hopkins University called The Apocalypse, and that was in 68, and it has now been restored. I'll send you a copy of that. But, of course, you can see that on the front copy of Lady of Liberty, you would expect to see Lady Liberty there, and there she is, also with the goddess in the New World. Who is that name of her?
The name of that Native American
on
the cover? That is a portrait that our publisher picked out, but I know who she is. Her name is Pretty Nose.
She was a
real Native American woman who fought at the Battle of Bighorn, Little Bighorn.
Really?
Yeah, so she's and she survived into her old age, but we don't have her written about in the book, but I think that was a good choice.
Yeah,
the
warrior princess.
Yeah, except they would not. They would object to the word princess. I have to point that out. The Native Americans, particularly in North America, they didn't have the concept of royalty. So this term, the Indian princess, and the one that we use from the earlier days, the Indian queen, they were European constructs, of course. They were projecting what they saw as a powerful woman amongst the Native Americans. Oh, she must be a royalty. Whereas all women had that elevated stature. They just couldn't see it that way.
It's amazing how much of the language and the culture of the divine feminine has been co-opted by patriarchy and reverse engineered, you might say.
That's a good term, reverse engineered.
The goddess in particular, yes.
Yeah.
So,
but that was just a torch, and there are other symbols on there on the Statue of Liberty that reinforce what that torch is and what she is, like the radiant crown.
Yeah,
you know, the rays of light from her crown means her enlightened inner being is in balance. We're looking at a being that is in balance. A goddess. Also, it's symbolic of. Everyone's seen halos in from Christian symbolism. It's symbolic of that. You know, Carl Jung, said the highest goal of evolution is the crown of eternal life. Also, in the victory
wow.
of higher aspirations over lower, baser nature instincts is also what the crown does. So the crown is spiritual enlightenment, from ignorance to wisdom. And even in the Kabbalah, the crown is Keter, the top Sephiroth holding the light, which is the source of all light. And that glow occurs in moments of mental and emotional and spiritual oneness, limitless light, or what's called Ein Sof. So you got some powerful symbols here that back up what that torch is all about.
Yeah, you know, when you mentioned Carl Jung, you know, he talked about, you know, the power of love, you know, the divine feminine, and the love of power, you know, which is its opposite. He says they're shadows of each other. Mm. And mm-hmm. and of course there's been, you know, a lot of talk about, you know, when they're in balance, or you know, one is in shadow and one is. And, of course, all the imbalance that we've seen since the founding of the United States as far as war-making, you know, when the Constitution and everything started getting inverted, subverted, and perverted with the patriarchal energy on war steroids, you know, for profit and power and all this stuff. All this is coming out right now. I see a resurgence of the whole understanding of all this with books like, you know, books like this. And a lot of other works coming out with the whole issue is why things are out of balance. It's the principle and person of the divine feminine, and that energy as a check and balance for, you know, the patriarchy on war and power steroids.
Well, you know, I've been reading your Emerging Blueprint series, Chapter 6. It's just absolutely fantastic.
Oh,
the rise
God.
Of the divine feminine, and as you say here, it's last upgraded to August 15th, 2016, which is not too long ago. I mean, this is, and I'm hoping that your listeners read this material and study it, because you and I are working on the same thing.
Well, we both know. We've been around long enough looking at the mystical history and divine destiny thing that it's got to come back around to the first principles of energy, the alpha and omega, male, female, you know, matriarchy, patriarchy balance. And the understanding of it in your book gives the historical context and brings it right up to the present and what we see in the world right now. Is a classic case with the internet of all this evidence for balance and the divine feminine and the TLC love principles, you know, hardware, all these concepts of harmony and community and for a balance. It's all becoming self-evident that with the internet, it's like there's a social conscience that's a nonlinear spherical conscience, which is really the spirit of 4+ billion global netizens who are connecting on the internet, and they realize with not only all the knowledge power in the world is at their fingertips, but that the utilization of it either is going to be with cooperation, or it's going to come out with competitive conflict, and so it comes back to, you know, we either, you know, agree to cooperate and get our act together as the family of man in a global village, or we'll be kicking at the pricks for maybe years.
Yeah, I know one person in our book said it's the female archetype is the only thing that can save the world right now. We just it's necessary for that balance.
The Dalai Lama, I think the Dalai Lama said
yeah.
Just a few years ago that the healing of America. Will come with the rise of the American woman.
You just took that right out of my head. I was about to say that too. It's so fitting, though, isn't it? And that's
it is
why
fitting.
It's so exciting that we are in this election season, that we have the possibility of electing the first female president. And you know, there's things that can be said against her as a leader, but she does have the biological history of being a woman, a mother, a grandmother, and a feminist, which is very important. I learned as a late coming around to realizing that I am a feminist. I didn't realize that until I wrote this book. and why that's still important to say and not be afraid of that word. But Hillary Clinton obviously has a long track record of working for women's rights and the family and families' rights, and she surrounds herself with intelligent women, which is the point that Bob made at the beginning of this interview.
I love that about Hillary Clinton, but there's things that I know and publish about Hillary Clinton that she represents the anti-woman. At the time when the divine feminine is trying to rise, you've got point, counterpoint, and there's so much of that she does with war-making and big farmer corporatism. You know, global, that it is anti-woman. So,
I think a lot of women of her generation, in entering into politics and business, they did have to take on the male persona, and they left behind their female strength.
I understand that. That's how she got there.
Yeah.
And I also understand that Trump is like the anti-masculine. In other words, the concept of the divine mother and the divine father, or the divine alpha, omega, matriarchy, patriarchy. They're both kind of anti-examples, again, I'm kind of channeling. I know a lot of my listeners who are all over the spectrum on this issue, and I don't mean to judge in the sense that there's so much evaluation criteria that comes into it, and it's very personal. And the future of elections in the United States and the world, I really think we'll go back to instant everywhere, interactive social conscience on social networks, and social networks will develop, and this is what I write about with Heartware and Global Telecom, but there will be councils. The people will elect, but it'll be real-time voting. It'll be 100 or 1,000, a million people responding to the same program at the same time with heart coherence and evaluation criteria that represents the language of consciousness and the holodeck between the ears, from upper brain, lower brain, left brain, right brain, forebrain, rear brain, three numbers in sequence. And I explain that on my website. Some of the listeners, you know, follow what I'm talking about because I've talked about this for years. But what that will mean as far as representative government, and I eventually see that all the major social networks will have like a 4 and 20 elders. You know, they'll be on 12 lines of the cosmic clock in astrology. You'll have a male and a female that are represented through their ability to communicate, you know, from their heart with, you know, mind congruence regarding the subject of that social network, whether it's an education network, government network, or, you know, any kind of a social network. And there's all kinds of them. But the idea of a representative self-government that involves and evolves our individual and collective conscience, I really see that will be, you know, sooner or later, we're going to have the rise of the divine feminine in balance with the divine masculine, and there'll be a conscience that makes all our social, political, and economic institutions accountable. Now, that's kind of a revolutionary statement, but problem now, there's no accountability to balance.
That's right. There isn't. And until that changes, we will be going around in circles and destroying ourselves. You know, when I think back over all of the things that I used to study and still do in a certain sense, do you remember some of the ancient teachings dealing with the lost continent of Lemuria?
And Lemuria,
Atlantis.
And Atlantis,
In Lemuria, human beings were both male and female. They were androgynous.
Yep.
And that they eventually, both sexes were separated, and the female, that really made a big difference, because when you looked at, I remember in the 60s when all of us, I don't know if you have long hair anymore, but I do, you remember when the old saying, you can't tell if he's a boy or a girl?
Yeah.
It used to be the thing that so many drunks used to...
trying to insult you because you had
long
hair.
That's right. That's right. But the point is that all of us are part male and female. And we've come from that androgyny, and we are moving back towards it. And now those who are androgynous have received, under the Obama administration, the freedom to be themselves. I had so many different friends that were androgynous in the past, and boy, the price that they had to pay for being that way.
Oh, yeah.
And
a lot of it is because of endocrine disruptors, you know, in the food chain that, and there was a specific period when, and I've seen even the research on it, of how, you know, just like they make hermaphroditic frogs, you know, all these chemical that are endocrine disruptors, you know, in the environment. Well, they do the same thing to humans. And I have a close friend who, when I knew him in the States, he was, he said he had both male and female organs, because I just, he always mm-hmm. thought he was a guy, but inside he had female organs, on outside he had male organs, and then in his head he was really confused for quite a, mm-hmm. after a couple marriages, he became a famous inventor with the quantum healing biotechnology, and had to leave the United States to Europe because they were after him, because, you know, he was healing people energetically, you know, with biofeedback in the body. And he went to Europe, when he was in Europe, he got the sex change operation there, and he was so successful selling his equipment, you know, his technology on international cruise ships, you know, in international waters where the feds couldn't prosecute him here in the United States. And he worked with a bunch of Hungary programmers in Hungary and Czechoslovakia, and, you know, in the east of Europe. And he had a I found out this last year that he had a nightclub that was all they were all beautiful women, but they were guys. All of them were guys that had a sex change.
And, relate this back to the Statue of Liberty, believe it or not.
I saw a video of him. He still had the same deep voice, but he was a beautiful blonde.
Oh, isn't that something?
Blew my mind, because I just knew him as, you know, brilliant electrical engineer.
You knew his soul.
Healer. Huh?
And you knew his soul, so you.
And I knew his soul, and I had friends that have gone to see him and visit him, and they blew. But he's really, you know, he's still brilliant. Whenever I've seen videos of him, and he looks as a woman, and he talks about the most advanced quantum physics for healing of any video I've seen on, I think, on YouTube yet.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, and but he has to live outside the United States pretty much, because, you know, in the United States people remember you were.
Well, maybe in about 5 years of our being, recognizing this, that he'll be able to return and have a normal life.
This is how we related the Black Madonnas to the Statue of Liberty, through the concept of conscious androgyny, because they are specifically made to be androgynous looking, just as she is, which is a classical form of art. So she's really, her face, if you look at it, it doesn't look male or female. It's deliberately in balance, and that's what the goal for all of us should be. I know that the more advanced of the males are almost half female, and that's what the women should be striving for as well. We're not really saying vote for women necessarily, but vote for men and women who are in touch with their female sides, and they recognize what is traditionally feminine as mm-hmm. strong, the nurturing, caregiving. The way that we devalue caregiving in this country is criminal, because that's what is the foundation for everybody's educational future and the success of business and the gross national domestic product. It all comes down to how well you feed and care for your children. So that should be the very first start.
Tender loving care. Tender loving care is the foundation.
Yeah, you write about that a lot. Right.
And what they call health care in the United States, they ought to call it just big pharma disease care. I mean, that's what it
is.
Disease
care should be called death insurance, not life insurance.
And it's instead of health assurance, it's death insurance.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, I'm so grateful I had you two on the show today. Could anything come to your mind that you would like to share about the book?
Before we sign off, I want to mention our website, which is secretlifeofladyliberty.com, where you can see all the illustrations we were talking about, including some from Bob's murals that show the Statue of Liberty and the Lady Freedom, the Indian Princess, the Indian Queen, the way they translated and they changed through the years, which is a really fascinating slideshow in itself.
To leave you with something that was so important to me when I was extremely poor and used to wander the streets of Philadelphia. I was having exhibits there, and I learned something really quickly, which was I wanted to help other people that I would see on the side of the road that were sitting there on the curbs and things of that nature. And one of the things I learned to do, which really made me internally very happy, was focusing blue light or green light on these people that were in such misery, sending it to them, thinking about them, and focusing it in such a way in hopes that their life would be better. And I believe that, yes, even if you have no money at all, and if you're in a terrible situation, that idea of sending light to people that need it, because we are moving into very dangerous times from as far as this planet goes, because the Earth is going to be rebelling. Whichever way you want to look at it, it wants to put itself in order again. She wants to reestablish her domain. And we're going to be going through some, we can watch storms that we've never heard or seen of before. Just take a look at what happens to Houston every now and then, or down there in New Orleans. The flooding is coming, Florida, et cetera. And over a long period of time, I think we are going to need each other to help each other, to help serve with each other. And it's not a situation of trying to make a buck. It's a situation of trying to assist others the way a being whose name was Jesus Christ used to teach, with his all-inclusive love.
Yeah, the power of love. And mm-hmm. when you were talking about sending light, it reminded me of the Hawaiian kahuna ho'oponopono, where you apologize for their situation. You feel sorry. You have empathy. You're one with them, and you just basically you say with your energy, "I love you. I love you," and more love to you. And thoughts have wings. We're moving into an era. The veil is thinning. Effective sensory perception, ESP. There's nothing extra about it. It's effective. When you have it, we all got it.
It's a standard equipment with a human being.
Right. So love one another.
Yep. All we need is
love.
Do we have your
address so we can send you things?
Yes, you do. And I thank you for sending me your mural picture. I'd love to see that. And I'll post it in a prominent place in my edifice here.
Mm. Oh, I'll send you a poster of the other mural. One of the others called "We the People."
It has Lady Freedom right in the middle as a Native American.
Oh,
woman.
I would love that. Lady Liberty is my hierarch. I mean, and I didn't say that at the beginning of the show, but she has always been my hierarch. You know, the head of the Great Karmic Board, and the whole story of with the Ascended Masters realm stepping through the veil, laying the foundation for a golden age with their torch of freedom and the book of the law. I think there's a book of love underneath her arm.
Yeah.
You know, I'm her.
And she's standing on a broken chain.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
She's breaking the chain.
The material world.
Of the material world, yes.
Oh, I love it. And I'm so grateful you guys were on the show. And
Thank you. Let's keep in touch.
And thanks, everyone, for listening. But thanks so much to you, both Robert and Laura. We'll keep in touch.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So goodbye, everyone. Keep the faith. See the good. Make it so. We'll be back in a couple weeks. Bye for now.
May the quickening and awakening of consciousness begin with you and your own personal evolution in higher consciousness. Thanks again for listening to Cosmic Love.